I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. There's a new book from the author Donna Morrissey, who joins me now. The Deception of Livy Higgs is described as a haunting, powerful book that's set in Halifax in 2009. The elderly Livy is ill, and she keeps drifting to her past, growing up in the French shore of Newfoundland in the mid-1930s to being in Halifax during World War II. She's dealing with her past and family members. And in the present, she's got a neighbor, Jen, a single mom to a young son, and the two of them are in each other's lives. The book has been compared to the Stone Angel, and Ms. Morrissey is said to be at the height of her powers in creating this novel, these strong characters, and this memorable book. The reviews have been quite good, and almost all of them are talking about how the story lingers with the reader long after putting the book down. I've started it, and the images the author paints with her words are quite powerful. I'll get Ms. Morrissey to tell us about the book, and I'll ask her what inspired these strong female characters and whether she's been thinking about memory and growing older. Donna Morrissey is an award-winning writer whose previous books include Kit's Law, Downhill Chance, What They Wanted, and Sylvanus Now, which was shortlisted for the Commonwealth Writers' Prize. She lives in Halifax, but joins me in Vancouver this day in the midst of appearances at the Vancouver Writers' Festival. Her website is at donnamorrissey.ca. The book is published by Viking. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Donna Morrissey. Ms. Morrissey, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
So the title character is Livy Higgs. She's 80. I read somewhere that she was inspired by someone you knew.
Yeah, she was actually inspired by this eccentric, reclusive, elderly woman that lived kitty-corner across the street from me in St. John's, Newfoundland. And she was very reclusive, but somehow my son managed to penetrate her little fortress. And as a result, I was able to become friends with her. And it was just kind of fascinating listening to some of her stories, just some. She didn't share a whole lot. She had about 20 cats, so we spent most of the time dealing with the cats whenever I was in for tea. And she just made such a powerful impression on me, and I loved her. And when I left her, it was very sad because I knew I would never see her again. She was quite elderly. And I guess all these years she's still in my mind, and I wanted to give her a story. I just wanted to resurrect her and give her a voice, and so that was the inspiration for the novel.
Yeah, and in terms of what you knew about May Holloway, was that simply when you were over for tea, or did you, say, do research in terms of who she was, or ask people around, say, if she had family or neighbors?
No, I didn't do anything like that.
Yeah.
It was only just what I knew from sitting with her. I know that she has family somewhere, but I don't even know how to spell her last name, so I don't even know if her family would recognize her as my friend, you know, because of I don't know how to spell her name.
Yeah.
She it was just, you know, in the moment I kind of cared for her, gave her lots of fish for her cats, and sent her baked bread and suppers, things like that. So, and she would take care of my cat when I left town, so we kind of developed a relationship like that. She had emphysema, so she would lie awake at night in her pillow, and my bedroom light would shine into her bedroom. And so she told me after, it was kind of like her lifeline when she was having difficulty. She knew I was just a phone call away.
Yeah.
And, you know, you learn how important that you are in someone's life, but you learn about it in hindsight or after, you know, our relationship was ending when I was leaving. She told me all of these things, and but how my light got her through some of her most difficult nights, and gosh, it just swelled my heart.
Yeah. Now, in the book, Jen, she's studying to be a nurse or a social worker?
A social worker.
Social worker, and then you did that too, right?
Yeah, I was actually modeled after me in a lot of ways, except for some of the scenes that were very creative, but I was a social work student and very poor at the time, and so, so she was afraid of me in the sense that, you know, I represented authority, and she knew that she would be shut down if authority ever got inside of her house. So it was one of those relationships that was started off with mistrust, but then slowly became, you know, one of trust and love.
Yeah. Now, in the book, Livy, she's having these mini heart attacks, I guess, and so she's fading in and out of consciousness. But when she's out of consciousness, she sort of thinks about her past and sort of the people therein. her father, her mother, her grandmother. In the book, this idea of memory and how it comes to, I guess there are, without giving the book away, there are sort of secrets from the past. How does she deal with them?
Well, I think one of the most important things we all owe ourselves in this journey through life is to go back and revisit some of those memories that helped shape us. You know, when we're little, things happen to us, things that hurt us, wound us, and things that sometimes healing is never really a part of the experience. You know, we just keep on growing into drifting from one situation to another. And I think as adults, you know, when we look back, we see life as these series of embers of memory, the memories that haven't quite died. You know, they still have life in them because they were never ever resolved. And I think that with Libby, it was her journey towards self-actualization to go back and to be forced to confront those memories and to bring light into the dark and to release them, you know, from that captive place. We all harbor such memories in our hearts, you know, that are painful, that hurt us, perhaps just a little too deeply. And I think that by going back and reliving them and learning to see them through the eyes of the adult, you know, as opposed to those defensive, deflective eyes of the child when they were happening to us. So I think it's an important part of our journey to go back, and I think this is what Libby did. And through going back, she was able to self-actualize, you know, towards the ending of her life.
Yeah. Now, is this something that she wanted to do, I guess, or is it just because it was brought on by illness?
This is something that I've always thought, that I always do. I'm always going back and trying to bring light into the dark, trying to understand who I am, how did I become who I am, and trying to learn how to see things through different eyes. And just learn to, you know, bring forgiveness and understanding and love into some of the most painful parts of our memory. And certainly, you know, I was able to do that through Livy, you know, as an experiment, perhaps.
Yeah. Maybe that's something that you suggest that the reader do as well, right?
I think it's a journey we all deserve, and we each owe it to ourselves. Somebody once said that a life lived once is a life half lived. It's only when we go back that second time and relive it, you know, are we actually bringing fruition to the journey, our journey, our particular individual journeys.
And in the course of writing this book and creating these characters that you have, Livy, Jen, and the others in the past, did you find that you learned something about yourself?
Well, because the concepts are so huge, yes. You know, we're talking about pride, and we're talking about truth, deception. We're talking about honor and integrity. We're talking about all of these huge emotions and values, you know, that we all connect with. And so it's about understanding those morals, those themes that run through the novel. It's about understanding what they are and how they play out in our lives. So this is why I guess that even though the story is about this woman who lived pretty much in isolation, you know, the themes are just universal. They're themes that we all wrestle with daily. So yes, they helped me. They helped me through researching them, through understanding how they can impact on a life. You know, that's how I grow too, through writing about those huge themes.
I made the perception, or the assumption, I should say, when we chatted, when we off tape before we started, about who your audience is. I'm a male and I'm 30, and I just assumed that I'm not your audience. Say the audience of the previous books, and to be frank, I hadn't picked up any of your previous novels before talking to you today. When you are writing, though, do you think about who the audience might be?
No, I never, and I didn't know that my books were perceived as being a female audience, because that is so wrong, because two of my major characters in two of my other books, the books were told through the male perspective. Sylvanus Now was very much a masculine book about the demise of the fishing industry and the impact on the soul of these fishermen. So what Daniel Chance was told from the perspective of a male, and my books are all heavily male-dominated. I have strong female characters. I also have strong male characters, and there's a huge balance in all of the books between the male and the female. So you'd hate to get labeled as a certain kind of writer that's not representative of what's going on inside. So, you know, props because they're not action figures or action-dominated or something. I don't know. How do we get past that? Do I have to come up with a title that reflects a masculine viewpoint? If I do that, then you lose out on the biggest market there is in book selling, which is the female part of our population. So I don't know.
Yeah, don't listen to me. I'm not a terribly bright person. So
I think you are. You're reading my book. I think you're incredibly smart.
Well, now I am. Now that I've started the deception of Libby Higgs, yeah.
Now we have to work on the deception of everybody else out there who thinks that the books are female dominated.
Yeah. Now, you live in Halifax, is that right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I went back on your website. You have this this clip of the interview that you did with Sheila Rogers.
You're really cool, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, Sheila was on a couple weeks ago, and I just love her. And I you know, when you do interviews, you look up to people like her because she's so good. And you took her back to the beaches in Newfoundland. That's where you grew up, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and one of the things that I found interesting about that interview, because of the way she did it, and she's such a gifted broadcaster, she took you back there and to the house and to the place where you grew up. And I've never been to that part of the country. And listening to the two of you talk made me want to go there. I mean, that's a very special place to you, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. It's everything.
Yeah.
It's who I am. It's like I can't even think about it. I'm so filled with nostalgia for the past. It's every fiber of my being is that place, that outport that I grew up in. I mean, I was 16 years old when I left it, and but it still lives. It still pulsates. It's still my heart. I go there every summer, and it is entrenched.
And is it a I guess it is my experience with where you're from. Is that common? I mean, do you find that people want to go there who haven't been there before?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, actually, but a lot of people go there just because they fell in love with the island from the first novel, Kit's Law. And I go home and, you know, my aunts, my cousins say, you know, there was this car came yesterday looking for where you lived, and that became quite a common story. And
really?
So then they put up a little monument, you know, to honor me, I suppose, at the end of the road in the community, because, you know, the road ends in the community. We're pretty isolated there. And so it just kind of became this little thing where a lot of people have gone there and just got their picture taken. And I've had people walk up to me in readings across the country and show me a picture of where they were standing by my little thing, you know.
Wow.
I just feel so darn good.
Yeah. So the place obviously factors into this book.
Place is everything.
Yeah.
I often wonder if you chose a different place, if the story would have been the same. You know, place is so important when you're setting a novel.
Yeah, and it's from the reading of the reviews and what I've read thus far of the book. I mean, it is, it's not only today, or I guess it's 3 years ago when this book was set.
Uh-huh.
You go back to the 30s. You go back to during the war years. How do you do that? Because you're obviously not old enough.
Well, you know, Google is pretty fantastic, and I do a lot of research. I did a lot of research about that, and I went to a lot of the veterans in Halifax, you know, from World War II that worked the ships. The Navy is still very active. It's still very. We have this huge these Navy ships there in Halifax, and so I used to have lunch with a couple of the old guys. You know, they're in their 80s, 90s now, and some of them are still really spry, hanging out in the bar every Thursday, that sort of thing, meeting. So I would sit with them and listen to some of their stories, and they gave me a pretty good education. When you're doing something like this, the problem is over-researching. You end up with way more information than what you'll ever use, because the stories get so fascinating that you just tend to get carried away with them. But they really help contribute to a sense of place and a time, because they give you these little personal details, you know, that you just couldn't think up on your own. and that history books don't give you because they're too minute.
I can't remember who was that once told me this on the show, that if you see an older person, talk to them and ask them a story, and they'll tell you a lot. And I think that's what you did with May, right?
Yes, that is exactly it. It's like, yeah, I mean, you know, it's a no-brainer. We know ourselves. We know what we know. Mm-hmm. Well, we don't know what they know, so why sit there and yak about what you already know about yourself? Go for the unknown. And it's always astonishing, you know, sometimes what that can bring forth.
And how do you write? Do you write on a computer, or do you?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I write on a computer. I could never do longhand. I don't know. I mean, cut and paste is just so wonderful.
It is, yeah. Now, when you're on book tour like this, do you find that you have time to write, or?
No. This is a time to celebrate. After 4 years in a room, you know, alone, working. To come out and do a circuit like this, to do the tour, to hit all the book festivals, it's just a great thing. I meet so many other authors, and you just get inspired all over again. And plus, meeting the people and connecting with audiences, you know, it just gives you a sense of who you are in this industry and what you do, because it is an industry, and the audience is a part of the industry, and the booksellers and the promoters and everybody, you know, we all play our role. And so when I come out of my room at the end of 3 to 4 years, it just feels it's good to get grounded in who I am, and that the fact that I fit into a bigger picture, and it's just so nice to relax and just absorb and enjoy, you know, the accolades that come, and because it's going to be another 3 to 4 years of aloneness again, you know, in my room. Yeah. When I leave here, I don't want to go.
Yeah. Now, you told Linda Richards at January Magazine, another fine website on books and authors, a story about an appearance you'd made at a previous Vancouver Writers Fest involving the author of Schindler's List.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys were arguing, I guess, right?
Well, I didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
He was just a Australian voice in the back seat. He should not have been in my cab or something. Anyway, he got into the cab with his entourage, and next thing you know, we were being hijacked by him and his entourage, and I started talking with him, and he called me Newfie, and I called him Jackass or something, and it went on from there. And when we got out, somebody said, "Do you know who that was you were arguing with in there?" And I was like, "No, Jackass." He wrote Schindler's List, and so you're kidding me. And so I went back to the car. I said, "Well, you know what? You owe me a fucking blurb, you know, for all of that. You got something to offer."
Yeah.
The next day, he took my book and got this beautiful blurb from him and an invitation to host him around Newfoundland next time he came back. And I've not heard of him since.
Yeah, it's stories like that because Hal Wake, who is a director of the festival, he comes
Hal
on
Wakeman.
He directs the festival every year. He comes on here and we preview the festival. It's stories like that we, those of us that go, just love. You know, we love hearing about what goes on there. Behind the scenes, say, or what happens with the authors. You've been here obviously before. Do you love coming here? What do you like about the Writers' Fest and what happens here in this week or so each year?
Well, what I love about, well, number one, it's just wonderful to get to Vancouver, and it's such a long ways from home. I just love it, and Calgary and Toronto, and I'm going to Haida Gwaii.
Haida Gwaii,
yeah. And going there next week, and then I come back. I go to Galliano, and these festivals are just so important to us because, you know, as I said to our last question, it's, again, it's understanding who you are and how you fit into this bigger picture of the book industry. You know, I'm not alone. It feels like you're alone when you it's just you.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you come out to these festivals, you know, the camaraderie, the just connecting with people and realizing, you know, that we are part of a bigger picture, that, you know, the book festival is not just about authors, it's about the people as well, and it's about Vancouver, and it's about introducing the city and what it has to offer to us, and It's just like going from one community to another, the festivals, like Toronto Festival, the Vancouver Festival, the Calgary Festival. We went to Bath, and the smaller festivals, you know, along the way. It's just wherever you go, you're greeted, and you're welcome, and you just feel like you have this family in every community across the country. It really makes the country small.
Did you think the readers out here on the West Coast say that they'll react to this book differently than, say, other parts of the country?
No, not at all. It's I have a Salt Lake show tonight, you know, about 130 people, probably, and I'm it's just me on the stage. So, who are these people, and what do they know about me? I can't come from so far away, you know.
Yeah.
No, readers are this huge cohesive group. Everybody shares books, everybody shares reviews of books, and it's our universal language in this country, you know, and books, they speak universally.
Well, when you're described as being at the height of your powers as a writer, I mean, that's a nice line, right?
It is as ever. I'm going to honor, but thank you for bringing that to me.
Yeah, but does it worry you, though, that it's all downhill from here?
God, no. No. I think the saying in this business is you either get worse or you get better.
Yeah.
So if I'm getting better, then that means I've yet to reach the pinnacle. If I didn't believe that, I would never write another word.
Yeah.
No, my best book is yet to come. It's the next one.
Yeah. What's the next book then?
The next book is actually like this big dark surly cloud over my head right now, threatening to touch down any moment like a tornado and invade me, and I just keep running from it because I'm so fatigued from this last novel. But it's actually going to be the third novel in the trilogy that I started with Sylvanus Now, and that I continued with What They Wanted, and this next one will be the ending to that. Or maybe not. Maybe it'll be the trilogy plus one. I don't know.
It's such fun talking to you today. I'm really looking forward to the book, finishing it. Thanks for this, and good luck with the book.
Well, listen, thank you for all this, Tom. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. The website for more, donnamorrissey.ca. The book is called The Deception of Livy Higgs. It's published by Viking. It's author Donna Morrissey on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.